was genuinely surprised that the Prue spy hadn't opened with a strong offense to convince him it was the only smart move. Going back to what we discussed last night, there are enough concerns on Capri and within the Ministry of Martial Affairs that leave me struggling to know who I can trust, Alokar said. Nobody knows exactly what the new generation battle synths look like. Not exactly. Seeing one in person made me realize that unless one had intimate knowledge of the secret program, they almost certainly wouldn't make that leap since they don't look much like their predecessors.
You buttering me up for something here?
What? Alokar was completely confused by the idiom. What I'm saying is that despite Mach's impressive equipment and Tallis's enthusiasm, you won't be able to pull this off without my help.
What are you offering, and what are you asking for?
Jason was much more precise in his language this time. He'd been around enough spooks to know that the devil was in the details, and often what they didn't say was what could come back and bite you in the ass. I have the technical team and the full dataset from the lab's servers needed to try and awaken Lucky within the new body. Just so we're clear on this, without my help, you will almost certainly fail, and there can be no second tries. I consulted with one of my engineers after leaving here, and she agrees that any mistakes made during this integration will result in the permanent loss of your friend, assuming he's still in there dormant. In return, I'd like to hire Omega Force. He said the last part with such obvious reluctance that Jason suspected it might be an act.
You're walking around with Keprian military hardware and two battle synths. I can't imagine what you would need us for, Jason laughed.
Not for your usual type of work, Alokar assured him. There is a splinter faction within the intelligence community on Capri that would very much like to get to the bottom of the sudden shift in the Confed Council's posture and reorganization. Nothing we're seeing makes any sense unless there's a new player at the table, and we need to know who that is. Before you start protesting, we've already made some inroads by exploiting our contacts within the Confed Special Service and their intelligence apparatus. We've been able to determine that a fleet battleship limped back home from an ultra-secret deep space mission that cost the task force damn near all their ships. From what we understand, whoever is working the levers behind the scenes appeared shortly after that ship made it back to its home port.
And the mission? Jason asked,
his mouth now completely dry, as the story sounded too familiar to be a coincidence. We've been trying to locate the captain of that vessel, Alokar said. We think he might have information crucial to identifying who this person or persons is, if our information is right and they came from beyond Confed space on his ship.
What makes you think he's even still alive?
Because Confed Intelligence Section has been quietly looking for him too. We think it may be to silence him permanently.
Confed Intelligence Section isn't all that fond of us.
Jason blew his breath out through pursed lips, thinking.
Having them scouring space looking for him could complicate things if we're recognized. But if you can successfully put Lucky's Matrix into that new body and wake him up, I'll agree to look for your wayward captain. I'm assuming you want us because your splinter faction doesn't have the resources to infiltrate the disgusting places this captain may have fled to.
That, and you seem to have a knack for kicking up information that other people try very hard to keep hidden, Alokar said, now relaxed and leaning against the railing after Jason had agreed to his terms.
Something big is happening in the Quadrant, Captain Burke, and I don't think it's anything good. It's just a hunch, but I'm rarely wrong about these things.
Jason watched the Prue walk away and begin speaking into his comm unit to coordinate with his people. He had little doubt that the Confed ship Alokar was speaking of was the one Jason had saved during a mission where they'd destroyed an ancient construct that had actually been a weapon of horrific scope. It had the ability to obliterate entire stars from billions of light years away, but he'd managed to demolish it before the Confed could get their hands on it.
The last remnants of that culture existed in a carefully encrypted file stored statically in his neural implant. The only thing Jason could think of was that the species he'd saved that battleship from had infiltrated the ship after they'd left, or that the captain had bumbled into yet another species and brought them back. It seemed unlikely that whoever hitched a ride back would be able to start exerting their will over the Confed's political system so soon, but Alloker seemed adamant that his sources were correct. He'd have dismissed the task out of hand if it wasn't for the fact that Earth was now becoming known as a fledgling power in the Quadrant. If the Confed was looking to expand, and was doing so by threat of force, the new upstart species with the oddly advanced starships might be a tempting target.
"Damn it," he swore softly, tossing the rest of his coffee down the drain. "I guess nothing can ever be easy."
Chapter 8 Alloker had been modest when he claimed he had access to a technical team. Once the crew had made the call, a swarm of high-level engineers had invaded their hangar and began efficiently inspecting and configuring all the machinery that Mok had procured. Tallis had tried his best to keep up and be useful, but it quickly became apparent that compared to the professionals, he was little more than a hobbyist. Though he didn't show it, Jason thought it had to have been a crushing blow to the young crew's ego. Strangely enough, all the engineers that came down to help all seemed to have some passing familiarity with Tallis, or had at least heard of his family, and seemed genuinely pleased to meet him. Jason watched the interactions closely to distract himself from the fact that a bunch of strangers were getting ready to desecrate his friend's corpse. He also wanted to get a better handle on the crew as a species. He'd heard of them, of course, as one of the Confed founding members, but he'd never even seen one before Lucky had dragged him back to Kepri to help one of his creators he called a master.
"So, what's all that going to be eventually?" Jason asked Twingo, nodding towards where the technical team was assembling a room within the hangar.
"Hermetically sealed environment where the transfer will take place," Twingo said. "There will be two more identical to that one by the time they're done. They have to prep Lucky for removing his primary matrix and supporting components in the first one. They'll sterilize him and remove any of the extraneous hardware still attached while the machines keep him unconscious, for lack of a better term. The second room will be a clean room that's pumped full of inert gas. That's where they'll perform the procedure to deintegrate Lucky from his current body. During this time, the new body will be going through a similar prep, and then, in the third room, the two will be joined."
"And after they stuff his matrix into the new body?"
"That's where the dangerous part comes in," Twingo said. "Lucky will then be moved into that chamber over near the far wall, and power from the Phoenix's main reactor will be routed in. Massive amounts of current will be pumped through the new body until its onboard power plant comes online and stabilizes. After that, we let him cool down, and hopefully, we'll be able to wake him."
"Where's Cage?"
Crusher asked, butting into the conversation with his usual grace.
"Working with Alloker's people to decrypt the technical specifications they pulled off the lab servers," Jason said.
"Where's Doc?"
"He's... actually, where the hell is Doc?" Jason asked.
Oh, shit," Twingo said. "I forgot to send him a message and let him know we're back. He's going to be pissed about missing all of this."
"Where is he?" Jason asked.
"Kasan," Twingo said. "It's a small city on the other side of the planet that has a university where he's been teaching in exchange for lab space and funding for his own research. Glad you reminded me, Crusher."
"Why did you bring it up?"
Jason asked suspiciously.
"He's a friend. I was just wondering where he was," Crusher said, far too defensively for it to be the truth.
"Bullshit,"
Jason said flatly.
"Before you guys left, Crusher signed almost all of his assets over to Doc," Twingo said absently, looking down at a tablet displaying some sort of schematic. "Pretty much the only things he had when you left were the clothes he was wearing and his weapons. Doc even technically owns Crusher's house."
"You son of a bitch! I knew you were a lying sack of crap!"
Jason exploded.
"I feel like I'm missing some..."
Twingo's voice broke off as Crusher squeezed his throat shut, choking the engineer.
I paid for everything because you said you made some bad investments and were broke, Jason fumed.
Listen, who are you going to believe? Me? Someone who followed you through hell and back after Lucky died? Or this little shitweasel who is a known liar when it comes to this sort of thing?
Crusher asked. While Twingo gurgled and struggled against the iron grip around his throat, Jason did the math in his head.
You owe me damn near 300,000 credits. That's absurd. The Phoenix doesn't run on unicorn farts and good intentions, you cheap bastard. Fuel and munitions all cost money.
Technically, that's your ship, and thus your investment and responsibility, Crusher said loftily. I'll pay you a third of that. It's more than fair, since I really don't have that much, and you're disgustingly wealthy thanks to your farming venture.
Twingo was slapping at the arm holding him and waving his hand over his head.
I think he wants to add something, Jason said.
Crusher let go, and Twingo fell to his hands and knees, gulping air and coughing.
In the spirit of fairness, Crusher had just signed a deal with Galvator that—
Shut up!
Crusher thundered, glaring down at Twingo. Appearing completely unruffled, the engineer stood up and stepped back behind Jason.
As I was saying, Crusher personally had enormous land holdings in Restaria. And now that Galvator wants to begin developing that planet, our friend here has been selling parcels of land off at a premium. Crusher may likely be richer than you are, despite your coffee being such a big hit in this part of the quadrant.
Okay, okay, Crusher said, putting his hands up. 200?
You said Doc is holding all of his assets right now? Jason asked, with a predatory smile.
Yep, Twingo said.
I think I'll take a flight out to the campus and talk to my good buddy, Jason said. It seems that he's the one I should be talking to about recouping my losses.
Crusher seemed to realize his tactical error and his head hung in defeat.
Damn it, he whispered. Don't worry, I won't charge too much interest, Jason laughed as he walked off, whistling to himself.
In reality, all the members of Omega Force were quite wealthy thanks to their own personal endeavors and the profit sharing from their better-paying missions. The money meant little to them. It was just another way to keep score within the group. As they began to rake in more than enough cash to live how they pleased, the game then became how to try and get the other guy to part with his money. Cage and Crusher were utterly ruthless when it came to cheating their friends, and now it looked like Jason had been given a gift from the heavens. Doc was the least interested in their petty schemes and games and would hand over a wad of Crusher's money to Jason without a second thought. While he walked out to prep the Phoenix for departure, thoughts of his friend became a bit less jovial. Doc was back in academia, teaching and doing his own research. Would he even be happy to see Jason come roaring in with the gunship to pull him away from all that yet again? Doc had always been the elder statesman among them, tempering the rashness of the younger members and giving their ragtag group a veneer of respectability. But how much longer would he want to fly around on an uncomfortable warship and put himself in constant danger? He was courageous, but he was no warrior. And more, Jason could see he wasn't as comfortable in the life as the rest of them were.
Maybe I should just leave well enough alone, he muttered.
Leave what alone? Cage asked from behind him.
Nothing. What's up?
You have a minute to talk? We cracked the data Alaker's team pulled off the servers, and there are some interesting things I found that I think we should be aware of before proceeding.
Want to take a flight? Jason asked, nodding towards the waiting gunship.
I'm heading to Tassan, to pick up Doc. Come to think of it, I'll probably need your help to find him.
Let's go,
Cage said, walking ahead towards the lowered ramp.
We really don't get out to see much of this planet, do we? Cage said.
The Phoenix arced lazily over the inland city. Tassan was much different from the sleepy coastal town Omega Force had built their base near. Tall buildings that were blocky, yet somehow still graceful, reached for the sky, and the surrounding suburbs looked clean and orderly, at least from 500 meters up. Jason just grunted at his friend's comment,
still digesting everything Cage had told him on the flight across the ocean to the far continent. Apparently, the engineers that had come with Alucard had admitted to the code slicer that there was less than a 20% chance that the reintegration of a battle synth matrix into a new body would be successful. They'd been prepared for that, but when they also found out that there was less than 5% of a chance that Lucky would retain his sanity, it gave Jason pause. As if that wasn't enough, the next bombshell had been the specs on the new body. If it lived up to what its designers said it could do, this next generation of battle synth would be markedly more powerful than its predecessors. So now Jason was stuck with the moral quandary of continuing on with the procedure or insisting they pull the plug on it before something irreversible was done. If Lucky beat the odds and awoke, but had gone insane and then escaped? It was a risk Jason wasn't sure he was willing to take. The bitch of it was that they wouldn't actually know if the worst had happened until well after the new body was powered up and he was moving around. It was questions like these that made him happy that he would be able to talk to Doc again soon. They landed the Phoenix at a local aerodrome. The DL-7, looking massive and intimidating, parked among the willowy planetary jumpers preferred on Satora. Jason himself felt no less conspicuous as he strode down the pristine halls of the university campus, his boots thudding on the polished stone floors. Students and faculty stopped and gawked as the rough-looking, openly armed Merc followed the map on his comm unit to a medium-sized lecture hall that had already let out. A few students milled around down by the lectern, and Jason was struck by how similar the scene was to his brief stint at college while back on Earth. He'd gone right after getting out of the Air Force, thinking it would give him some direction. Instead, after two incidents, it was agreed that if he left quietly, no criminal charges would be pressed. Jason spotted Doc standing in the middle of the group, smiling and joking as he talked to them. He looked so comfortable and natural in this environment that Jason almost turned and slunk away. But Doc turned his way, his eyes widening. He began waving furiously for Jason to come down, so the choice to leave or stay was firmly ripped from his grasp.
"Look at you, teaching and wearing regular clothes and everything," Jason said, pasting a forced smile on his face and embracing his friend.
"I'd not heard you were on your way back." Doc seemed genuinely pleased to see him.
"You don't look too bad. A few new scars that I might be able to get rid of if you'll hold still long enough. How's Crusher?"
"Same as always," Jason said.
"Is there a place we can..."
"Yes, yes, of course," Doc said. "Everybody, if you'll excuse us, this is one of my dearest, oldest friends, and we have much catching up to do. Please just message any questions about the lecture to me, and I'll get them in turn."
The group of young, fashionably dressed aliens looked bemused as their professor walked off with someone whom they'd have crossed the street to avoid under normal circumstances. Doc led him down a corridor that required an access pass and into a well-appointed lab that hummed with machinery. Jason had never been in a genetics lab, so he was mildly disappointed there weren't half-dissected specimens lying about and strange mutant hybrids locked up in cages.
"I hope this visit means you've put your demons to rest out there on the fringe, and you're coming back home permanently," Doc said.
"Otherwise, I have to assume Crusher sent you here to collect his money and property."
"We'll get to that later," Jason said darkly. "But we're back. Did you find what you were looking for out there? Do we ever?"
"No," Doc said simply, shuffling some equipment about on a bench.
"But that never stops you two from trying."
"I assume you've heard what the other two were doing with Lucky?" Jason asked. Doc nodded slowly and carefully, edging towards the door.
"I did. There wasn't much my expertise could give to the project, so I sat this one out," he said.
"Well, they've managed to do the impossible and found a second-generation body," Jason said. "They're back at the hangar with it and a team of Keprian engineers getting ready to try the reintegration."
"And you're fine with this?"
I've shifted my attitude about it slightly, Jason said. I don't agree with it on principle, but Tallis has sold me on the theory that Lucky isn't dead, just grievously wounded.
That's one way to look at it, Doc said, squinting as he worked through it in his own head.
The help from the Keprians didn't come free. We have a new mission, an actual Omega mission, in exchange for their help trying to shove Lucky's noodle into that new body, Jason said.
He paused and looked around the lab, and then down at himself, thinking again just how out of place he was, and how Doc fit in perfectly.
Look, Doc, you've built a life here, and have legitimacy and all the things you were forced to walk away from when Bondress strong-armed you into servitude. I don't want to pull you away from—
Please don't leave me here, Doc blurted out.
Yes, this is everything I thought I wanted for so long, and I've never been more bored in all my life. I never thought I'd actually be saying this, but I miss the old life. Sure, the ship's uncomfortable and you are all disgusting, filthy creatures that if left to your own devices would stew in your own—
I get the point, Doc.
I mean, the smell in the common area is enough to—
Doc!
Oh, sorry. What I'm saying is, please don't kick me off the team because you think that's what's best for me. I can still be useful to Omega Force.
You're part of the family, Doc, Jason said. I'd never kick you out, even if you stayed here.
I've got the Phoenix over in that small aerodrome by the warehouse district. You want me to wait for you, or do you have your own ride?
I'm ready now, Doc said.
He opened a cabinet and tossed a pack on the counter, pulling out the gray uniform they all wore. When he saw Jason's expression, he smiled sheepishly.
I hoped you'd come back for me eventually, so I've kept go-bags stashed around, just in case.
Jason just smiled and shook his head, trying not to laugh. Only Doc would be so fussy that he assumed if he wasn't ready to leave a millisecond after being asked that they'd leave him behind.
Chapter 9. They've been in there for 15 hours at a time, breaking it up into shifts. It takes so long to prep and go in that they're all working extended hours.
Any word of how it's going? Doc asked.
None, Crusher said.
The Phoenix had barely touched down on the landing pad from the trip to pick up Doc when Twingo came out of the hangar, already dragging a power cable as thick as Jason's arm up the ramp and grumbling about him holding up their schedule. Now, nearly 5 days later, exhausted engineers and technicians were walking around with a little more zip in their step, and Jason could feel the energy crackle in the air. Without being told, he knew that today was the day. Raw power from the heart of the Phoenix would pour into Lucky and fire up his own power plant. Once it was running, the BattleSense systems would begin to initialize, and soon after, they would know if the reward was worth the risk.
You'll likely want to remain outside the hangar in case there's a mishap,
one of the Prue engineers called from the opening of the temporary clean room they'd built.
No argument here, Jason shouted back.
For the first 2 hours, nothing happened. Then, without warning, the Phoenix rumbled and shook a bit, and the crew backed away from where they had been resting under the wing. Jason looked up and saw that the exhaust vents had opened up on the dorsal hull, and superheated gas was pouring into the muggy evening air. The reek of ozone and the prickle on his skin were additional signs that whatever was going on inside that shelter, it was taking a prodigious amount of power, and his ship had throttled up her main reactor to keep up with the demand. The onslaught lasted for another 20 minutes before they heard the Phoenix settle down, and the cryogenic tanks placed near the third sealed-off chamber began hissing.
That's it, Twingo said. They're cooling him down now. That means they were able to start the power plant and that all his individual subsystems began booting up on their own. That's a positive sign, since the primary processing matrix has to be stable and functional for that to happen. Otherwise, the power systems just shut back down.
It took a moment for what his friend said to sink in. Jason's heart began pounding, and he felt lightheaded at the fact that his friend was alive
and lying not 50 meters away from him. The tension of thinking of all that could go wrong was giving him a headache, but all he needed to know for right now was that Lucky was more alive now than he was after that ill-fated assault on a Keprian military base. After a bit, the engineering team began filtering out of the makeshift lab complex, even as technicians began breaking it down now that there was no longer a need for it. Tallis saw them milling about by the ship and jogged over.
"We're cautiously optimistic," the exhausted young Prue said.
The answer sounded forced and rehearsed. None of them were buying it.
"What do you think?" Jason pressed.
Tallis looked around and shifted uncomfortably before continuing.
"I couldn't begin to guess whether or not he makes a full recovery, if that's even the right word," he said. "His matrix reinitialized as it was supposed to, and it's stable. All their instruments show his higher functions are all within acceptable limits. But when he awoke, it was obvious he had no idea who I was. I've only been around him a short time, so I'm not reading too much into that right now. This procedure hasn't been done since the very early days of the Battlesynth program, before they realized how individualistic these beings are. And despite the equipment saying he's completely fine, there's no way to predict what sort of psychological damage was done to Lucky from both his death and now waking up inside of a new and unfamiliar body."
"Has he said anything?" Twingo asked.
"No," Tallis said. "The tech team lead said it would maybe be a good idea for one of you to go in there with him now and see how he reacts. I suppose you'll need to decide who amongst—"
"Jason!" the other four members of the crew spoke in unison and without hesitation.
"Okay then, Captain Burke it is," Tallis said. "We can just walk in there without any special precautions. The atmosphere has been purged with ambient air and the temperature is normal."
"Are his weapons active?" Crusher asked.
"Of course. That's what makes this so dangerous," Tallis said. "There's no way to deactivate a Battlesynth weaponry without putting it into a stasis pod."
"Maybe we should—"
"No," Jason said firmly. "If Lucky is going to come through this, he has to know that we believe in him and trust him as much now as we ever have. If we stick him in a box and begin turning things off right after he's reawakened, there's no telling what further damage we might do."
"For the record, the lead engineer agrees with your assessment," Tallis said.
"Let's go."
Jason didn't wait for any further protest from the others or for Tallis to catch up. He wasn't sure what he expected, but the being lying in a reclined position wasn't it. It occurred to Jason that he hadn't really looked over the new body his crew had stolen. It was shorter than the Battlesynths he was used to, and less bulky as well. The armor seemed to be smoothly integrated, and there weren't any visible joints or creases. Not even the covers for the arm-mounted cannons could be easily picked out. Overall, the new body had a lithe, graceful look to it, even while lying still on the table. When the door closed softly behind him, the being turned its head and stared at him, sending Jason's heart to racing. For a long, long moment, the two just stared at each other, neither moving.
"Lucky?"
Nothing. Not even a twitch. The longer it went on, the more unnerved Jason became.
"Can you hear me, Lucky? It's me, Jason. You saved my life on Kepri. We've been friends for years. Ring any bells?"
After a few moments, the Battlesynth, was it even really Lucky, turned its head away and began looking at the ceiling again. Jason had been ready for this sort of thing after talking to the technical crew, but the emotional punch in the gut was no less painful. He was unsure how to proceed to try and see if his friend was still in there, and he realized how uniquely unqualified he was for the task.
"Captain,"
Alloker said from the doorway. Jason hadn't heard him enter. At the new voice, the Battlesynth swung its head about again and stared at the newcomer. Alloker seemed to shudder slightly.
"Yes?"
"I don't wish to rush you during this delicate time, but we have fresh intel on your objective," Alloker said. "If you wish, he could remain with us and my engineers can assign a team to stay behind and observe him.
No. He comes with me, Jason said firmly. No offense, Alucard, but there aren't many people in the galaxy I trust right now to have his best interests at heart, and all of those people are leaving on the Phoenix with me.
No offense taken, Captain, Alucard said, sounding relieved he wouldn't actually have to honor the offer he'd made, likely in haste.
About that intel?
Yeah, let's get started, Jason sighed. I'll meet you up in the mezzanine.
He was interrupted by the battle synth rolling smoothly from the table and coming to stand near him.
Shit, don't make any sudden moves like that, Lucky. My nerves are about to snap as it is.
The battle synth just stared past Jason directly at Alucard.
I'll meet you up there, Captain.
The Keprian spy made as dignified an exit as he could, just short of sprinting from the room and leaving Jason alone with the battle synth that was now standing very close. Unlike the previous generation, this one didn't seem to fill the room and tower over him.
Was your intention to follow me, or am I standing in your way?
Nothing.
Jason bit back a sigh and turned calmly to leave, not looking back. As he'd hoped, the battle synth padded softly after him. He walked out of the second lab area and into the hangar, waiting for the rest of the crew to play it cool as the battle synth paced behind him a few meters away, mostly ignoring everything around it. The first snag was when Jason stepped onto the lift to go up to the mezzanine and it didn't get on with him, at least not all the way. It was half on, half off, and not responding to verbal or nonverbal coaxing to move the rest of the way on. Gritting his teeth, Jason reached out and grabbed its upper arm, pulling gently, and hoping that it wouldn't take the gesture as a threat and rip his head from his torso. Thankfully, it accepted the guidance and moved fully onto the car, stopping where Jason put it. He activated the lift and saw it flinch and look about, but it was otherwise still on the ride up. It wasn't until he guided the battle synth over near where he would sit around the large circular table that he realized he'd been holding his breath for the last 2 minutes and his ass was clenched so tight it could have started a fusion reaction with a bit of deuterium.
Well? Crusher asked softly as they all approached.
I just don't know, Jason admitted.
If Lucky's in there, he's not acknowledging when spoken to, and I'm not sure how much of what I'm saying it even understands.
Tallis?
There's so much that's not known about this procedure, Tallis said helplessly. The entire thing was abandoned in favor of just making more units, and the conventional wisdom says that what we're attempting is impossible. I still feel that Lucky's strength and desire to be with you will allow him to overcome the challenges we've put in front of him, but I couldn't begin to say how long that might take. Don't forget that Lucky is a Type 4 Matrix. His above-average intelligence could be a big factor in how this goes.
It might not happen at all, Alucard said, when he walked up on the tail end of the conversation. My engineers have said it's shown no overtly aggressive moves, even when mildly provoked, so I'm fairly confident it won't try to kill you all once you're underway. But keep in mind that all synths, especially battle synths, had a high rate of matrix instability, or insanity, if you prefer the term.
I thought you didn't know much about them, Jason said.
I've been briefed extensively by my engineers while I was deciding if we should allow it to continue as it is or put it back in stasis.
At Alucard's words, the battle synth's head snapped over to stare at him. While terrifying, it also gave Jason some hope that Lucky was indeed in there and understood some of what was being said around him. If anything would provoke a response, it would be the threat of a stasis pod.
We'll not be doing that, he said. When I met Lucky, someone had put him in one of those things. I promised him back then that I would never let that happen to him again.
Alucard seemed to consider the statement before slapping his arms lightly on his thighs. A gesture Jason had learned was roughly equivalent to a human shrug of indifference.
All I'm saying is that it may seem harmless right now, but more than a few people have found out the hard way that they can be unpredictable and
there are no variabilities within 777's primary processor matrix,
A deep voice boomed across the mezzanine. Jason turned as the two battle synths that had come with Alokur strode forcefully towards them.
We have verified this ourselves. He is free to leave with his compatriots and try to rediscover what he once was.
Jason noticed that Lucky never turned or even reacted to his cousins walking up and standing near him.
The politics involving battle synths is unbelievably convoluted, but essentially, 499 and 302 have the final say in this matter.
Alokur slapped his thighs again.
If they say he's safe to be out in the general public, I have to accept that recommendation.
Very well, Jason said. He comes with us, and that's final.
I would have a word with you before you depart, Captain Burke, 302 said, turning and clomping off before Jason could even answer.
I think we'd best get this brief started, Alokur said.
The sooner I disseminate this information, the sooner you can get to work paying off the debt you owe me.
After 2 days of frenzied preparation for their mission, the crew was finally ready to board the ship and get started. Jason remembered the days when it wouldn't take more than an hour to get the ship ready and be gone. He hoped they'd all get back into the groove of things before too long. During that time, the battle synth, Jason still couldn't bring himself to think of it as Lucky, had become more compliant and followed his verbal instructions without much fuss, but only Jason's. The others took this as a hopeful sign, but Jason remembered a group of ducklings he'd rescued as a kid. They'd imprinted on him and treated him like their mother up until they were old enough to go their own way. Like the ducklings, just because the battle synth was following him around and listening to him didn't necessarily mean anything more than mistaken identity.
A word, Captain.
Sure, Jason said to Combat Unit 302. These morons will be arguing for another 2 hours before everything is packed into the ship.
Is your unit always so disorganized?
I'd like to say no, but I don't want to lie to you, Jason said.
You, go up there and help them move those crates.
The battle synth turned to look where Jason pointed, and then back again. It took a bit of hand signaling and physically pushing it away before it moved off. Jason watched its liquid smooth movements and a display of its potential strength as it grabbed a munition crate off the loader and walked it up the ramp.
It's a lot stronger than you guys are, isn't it?
Significantly so, 302 said, without a trace of defensiveness. Its power systems are also far more advanced, and it carries weaponry that puts mine to shame. That particular model also has some unique properties. We think it may have been designed as an infiltration unit, which explains its smaller stature.
Jason thought back to the conversation he'd had with Tallis and the other engineers about how the second generation of battle synths weren't uniform in construction. Apparently, whoever was leading the new program had opted for specialized soldiers rather than just one type of body.
What did you need to talk about?
I can see you are trying to hide your frustration, and I would ask that you continue to contain that, especially in front of 777.
So you think he's really in there? Jason asked.
I do, 302 said. Our minds work so differently from each other's that it is difficult for me to convey why I think that. Likely as difficult for you to explain to me why you feel certain things. We just do. And each of us is certain in that feeling. 499 and I were present when his matrix initialized, since we were the only two who could withstand the environment, and we saw the spark when he awoke.
I wish I could be as certain as you.
Jason watched as the battle synth, inexplicably, grabbed one of Crusher's packs and threw it across the tarmac from the top of the ramp and looked to be going back for another when Twingo ran up and stopped it by waving his arms.
But I won't give up on him, if that's what you're concerned about. I owe him my life, and I'll repay that debt.
That is all we can ask of you, Captain, 302 said. 777's life was unprecedented before. Now, even more so. He is fortunate to have friends like you.
I can already see this is going to be a lot of fun,
Crusher complained from where he was picking up his clothes. The bag hadn't survived its high-speed impact with the ground and had burst open, spilling clothes everywhere.
Why the hell did it throw your bag?
I only mentioned something about how the old Lucky was a lot more fun to be around and that one thing he used to do was clean the crew quarters and common areas, Crusher said, as he chased a sock that a local avian had taken an interest in. Then the bastard just started throwing my stuff out of the ship.
You could be right, Jason said to 302. Lucky may be in there right under the surface.
I think I left my house unlocked.
You mean my house? Doc asked. I haven't signed everything back over to you yet.
You know what? Enough! Jason barked.
They were barely out of the Satora system, and he was already regretting his decision to get the entire crew back together. He glanced over his shoulder and saw that the battle synth had taken up station just inside the bridge entrance, its feet easily fitting within the barely perceptible depressions on the deck from countless hours of Lucky standing in the same place. He shook his head to clear the fluff. 302 had been right. If he was going to help his friend, he needed to start considering the strange battle synth behind him as Lucky, and not wait for some obvious sign that his friend was in there. It was difficult, however, as the last words Alokur's head engineer had given him were still bouncing around his head. The odds were even that whatever would emerge, if anything ever emerged, would no longer be Lucky. It had something to do with how extreme the neural pathway rerouting was when the processing matrix adapted to the new body. They could be looking at an entirely different being with its own personality and motivations. The thought chilled him.
So, what was that garbage Alokur was blathering about on the Confed? Crusher asked. Something about a restructuring?
The bridge broke out in a chorus of groans.
It was literally one of the most important parts of the briefing, Jason snapped. How much of the rest did you ignore?
Most of it, Crusher admitted. You didn't hire me to be an analyst.
I don't remember hiring you for anything. You just wouldn't go away, Jason muttered, before raising his voice.
The full brief is available on the computer. I suggest you watch it.
I'd heard rumors from some of the other professors, Doc said. Do we believe that a new political faction has popped up and so quickly secured control of the Confed Council to begin making such drastic policy changes? Who said it was quickly? Cage asked. This could have been in the works for some time. Given that we're hunting down a fleet officer the captain thinks might have been in command of the battleship we saved near that ancient relic, we're talking a timetable of years.
That species that attacked them didn't seem the sort for this type of underhanded subtlety, if memory serves correctly, Doc said. Maybe they encountered someone else?
Who knows, Jason shrugged. Not really our concern.
I don't know, Captain. This seems like a diametric shift in quadrant politics, Cage said. Before this, the Confed was more or less a protection scheme pretending it was a government. From what Alokur showed us? They're now taking the whole thing a bit more seriously, and they're not being subtle about leaning on systems with the fleet to get them in line.
Is this a bad thing? Twingo asked. Maybe a Confed that takes its role seriously will bring a little stability to the region.
Why the hell would we want that? Jason asks.
You do realize we exist to operate within that instability, right? If the fleet actually gave a shit about protecting the little guy, we'd either be out of a job or actually have to start being the bad guys and work as mercenaries. What else is there for us?
Grow shrubs on Satora, or lecture spoiled little brats in climate-controlled lecture halls, Crusher said.
Or go back to Galvator and get fat and lazy while pretending to be in charge of the legions, Jason said.
Oh, wait, you already did that once. The evening quickly devolved from there. It started as a few friendly barbs and ended up being an every-man-for-himself deathmatch where they used their intimate knowledge of each other's lives to go for the throat. After an hour, Twingo left the bridge claiming he needed to check the engines, but Jason swore he saw him crying and told the others. Crusher immediately leapt from his seat and chased the engineer, intent on the kill. The move seemed to backfire, since once Jason made his escape, he saw Crusher sitting by himself at a galley table, looking morose and drinking.
"Wow, that got out of hand pretty quick," he remarked to Doc.
"I'm not speaking to you,"
Doc almost shouted, before fleeing to the infirmary.
"Ah, it's good to be back," Jason said, stretching while looking at the wall clock to see if he could go hit the rack and get himself reacclimated to ship's time.
"Crusher, I'm grabbing some sleep. You're on bridge watch." "Fuck you!"
Jason was halfway to his stateroom before he realized the battle synth was trailing along behind him. This one was much quieter than the others, almost sneaky. He turned around and it stopped, just staring at him. Jason peered into those oddly organic-looking eyes, trying to detect some spark behind the impassive face.
"I wish you could let me know that you're in there, buddy."
He waited a few more seconds to see if he had a response before choking off another sigh and trudging to his quarters. As he expected, the battle synth followed him into the room and then, in a move that shocked and dismayed him, sat down in the chair by the desk. Jason tried not to read anything into it. Lucky never sat unless he had to when he was piloting a vehicle, but his old body was also ill-suited for furniture designed for the average biological being. The battle synth's eyes never left him as he changed and climbed into his rack, dimming the lights a bit so he could sleep. Before he drifted off to sleep, he was surprised at the realization that he wasn't afraid of the powerful machine sitting in the chair, staring at him. In fact, he was completely comfortable in its presence, despite the lack of communication and the fact it could punch through the hull and let all the air out of his quarters while he slept. That had to count for something, didn't it?
Chapter 10. "Here we are, the gateway to hell."
"You wish," Crusher snorted. "Hell would be a vacation compared to this place. You're sure about this?"
"The intel from Alicor indicated the trail of our missing officer went cold here," Jason said. "Mock scrubbed the area through his analysts and they came to the same conclusion, so here we are."
"I don't get why we have to be the ones to dig this guy out," Cage said.
"Because Alicor is a one-man band right now, without any operational assets," Jason said. "And also because the folks that inhabit this area of space are very good at sniffing out government spies and operators."
The Phoenix was sitting still in space relative to the star they could barely make out through the canopy. She had meshed out just inside the system heliopause, and now they were taking stock of how they wanted to approach this first toe dip into the pool. The planet was called Nicene III and was considered the gateway into a region of space known as the Caspian Reaches. It was a small cluster of stars that sat tucked between a nebula and a Class IV gravitational anomaly, forcing everyone to filter into the reaches through the Nicene system. It was a wild, lawless area that shrugged off the attempts of any government to bring it to heel with seeming ease. Even the mighty Confed fleet, with its powerful battlecruisers and numerical advantage, saw their push into the reaches grind to a halt, as every system would whittle away at them just a bit, and the locals would refuse to cooperate. The place was so insane that even hardened criminal crews would avoid it unless absolutely necessary. Mock told them how the local guilds would make sure that anybody coming into their backyard to try and turn a few quick credits without permission were made an example of. It made Jason chuckle as he realized that the problem most of the covert services had with infiltrating the reaches was that they tended to follow the same tired playbook. They'd take in a pile of some illicit material, be that weapons or narcotics provided by their handlers, and then move it to try and fence it. Posing as smugglers or a smash-and-grab crew worked well in most places, but not here. The inevitable failures of these attempts confused most intel outfits and thus made them fearful of trying again. Omega Force, however, had a reputation in the underworld for not caring about money.
They were also known to punch far above their weight class, so they, like the Reaches, were largely left alone, as they were far more trouble than they were worth to piss off. As long as Jason rolled in and made it clear they weren't there to pester the guilds or step on any toes, they'd be allowed to pass without much more than the usual ration of bullshit from the locals.
"We should have had Alokar work up a warrant on us before trying this," Doc said.
"Too easy to backtrack and see if it's a fake," Jason shook his head. "Besides, any warrant that would send us scurrying here would almost certainly come with a hefty reward or a kill-on-sight order. These animals might take a crack at us if we make it too tempting."
"They may try to test us anyway," Cage said. "Word is getting out that Lucky is..."
He trailed off and looked over at the battle synth standing behind Jason. It didn't move or react to the Viren's words.
"Anyway, we should have asked one of Alokar's battle synths to come along."
"They have their own mission, and I didn't have time to fly all the way back to Terra Novas to ask Lot 700 if we could borrow one of their guys," Jason said.
In the reflection of his multifunction display, he saw the battle synth twitch when he mentioned Lot 700, the lot Lucky was originally from. It wasn't much, but it was at least something.
"So we're rolling in as ourselves?" Crusher asked. "I would have thought a disguise would be helpful."
"I think in this case our reputation will work in our favor," Jason argued. "We'll get a few dipshits that want to test themselves against us. A few object lessons and the rest will learn.
Probably."
Crusher looked doubtful, but only grunted in reply. Without waiting for further argument from the rest of the crew, Jason pushed the throttles up and set a shallow course down to Nicene 3. The trip down to the planet would take the better part of 30 hours at the velocity he dialed up. He could get there much quicker, but discretion was the name of the game, for now. One of the issues that had been cropping up lately was that the Phoenix was becoming too notable. There were less and less Jepson ships flying about the quadrant, and the newer designs coming out of the commercial shipyards eschewed the sleek, aerodynamic shape of his ship for a more blocky, utilitarian design philosophy. It was the end of an era, it seemed, and the change was not for the better, in Jason's opinion. The thought that one day the Phoenix would have to be retired because she was too famous and too outdated almost gave him an anxiety attack. He detected movement behind him and saw that the battle synth had turned and was walking off the bridge. He met the questioning looks from the others and could only shrug helplessly. He had no idea what was happening in the machine's mind right now. The best he could hope for was that Lucky would begin to emerge soon, and in the meantime it wouldn't go off the rails and kill them all or punch a hole in the main reactor housing. In all his years running around on the edges of society within the quadrant, Jason had never been to the Caspian Reaches. Its reputation among the other spacers, as well as a lack of any monetary opportunity, had kept him away. He'd heard all the wild stories about the sliver of habitable systems that was so lawless even the Confed didn't think it was worth the trouble to impose their will. As such, he wasn't sure what he'd expected from the gateway world of Nicene 3, but the modern, clean city the Phoenix was flying over sure as hell wasn't it.
"I was expecting a shittier version of Breaker's world," he said aloud, as the state-of-the-art automated landing control system directed them to a landing pad far away from the terminal among a group of heavy cargo shuttles that dwarfed the Phoenix.
"All a thin veneer of civility," Cage said. "I've worked out here before. Trust me. Once we're deeper into the Reaches, you'll be begging to go to Breaker's World for a vacation."
"So why is this place so clean?" Crusher asked.
Even as he said it, however, a rough-looking crew from one of the shuttles strolled by, eyeing the gunship with interest. All of them were openly and heavily armed. The fact they were carrying such powerful armament so openly at a commercial spaceport was a good indicator that the place was a little more sporting than your typical Confed world.
"The Reaches are controlled by three overlapping syndicates. The guy who runs this one? Nobody actually knows his name. Likes to pretend that he's a businessman and not a low-life criminal like us, Cage said, ignoring the protests from Twingo and Doc at the casual insult. He spent an unfathomable amount of money constructing this city, but the rest of Nicene 3 is a dump. The planetary government, which of course lives here in total luxury, is your usual corrupt puppet tribunal you'll find on most of these planets. The people who pretend to be in charge are nothing more than kleptocrats that make sure things run smoothly on the surface for the real people in charge.
This sort of system can only exist if there's a significant source of income, Doc said. What do these syndicates specialize in?
They're fairly diverse, but the main cash crop is trafficking in beings, Cage said. A lot of people come here to escape trouble back home or fancy themselves hard cases that can make their fortune in a place like the Reaches. Many of them end up shoved into transports after being fitted with neural restraining collars and shipped off to places to do things no free being would.
I've heard the Sabror Protectorate recruits for Rakgada here, Crusher said, referring to the Protectorate's feared unit of shock troops that were used as the leading edge when subduing a planet. I'm going to assume that most of them weren't volunteers.
The mood on the bridge turned somber as each of them remembered the circumstances under which they had met. Cage, Crusher, and Lucky had all been locked up in stasis pods about to be sold to the highest bidder when Jason, Twingo, and Doc had rescued them and stolen the gunship. It wasn't a time in their lives they wanted to relive.
Doc, before we even drop the ramp, let's make sure all our countermeasures are working, Jason said. Due to the risks of their chosen vocation, all the biological crew members had been implanted with a suite of countermeasure devices that would ensure a neural restraint system wouldn't work on them. He looked over his shoulder at the battle synth, unsure what he was even going to do with it during the mission. At least nobody would even know what it was, much less how to subdue and capture it. The only real problem was that it might follow after someone just because they told it to.
Whoa, what the hell do you two think you're doing? Crusher demanded, as Twingo and Cage followed him and Jason into the armory and started picking through the assorted weaponry.
Getting ready for the mission, Cage said. He grabbed a concealable flechette carbine, going through the seldom-used piece of gear with a familiarity that made Jason suspicious.
Cage had never shown any ability or inclination to be on the operations side of things, preferring to skulk about and manipulate things remotely via his network connections. Twingo sure as hell never participated in dirtside ops, but the squad engineer had pulled down a pair of heavy plasma pistols and was expertly loading them and fitting a pair of shoulder holsters to himself.
Since when do you two runs leave the ship? Crusher pressed. Leave the big boy stuff to the...
That was all he got out, as Cage whirled lightning fast and stuffed a compact plasma pistol up under the Galvetic warrior's nose while pressing a second one into his groin.
Listen here, you overgrown sack of garbage, Cage hissed. While you two were out feeling sorry for yourselves and making a sport of beating two-bit hustlers to death, Twingo and I were left holding the bag. We found Lucky's new body, and we took all the risks infiltrating top-secret Keprian installations. Don't tell me what I can and can't do. You got that?
Yeah, I got it, Crusher said. I was just joking.
He didn't twitch a muscle, not even to breathe, until Cage removed the second pistol. Jason watched in stunned silence as the little Viren continued to put together his kit and then stalked back out.
What the hell was that about?
It looks like the team dynamic has changed just a bit, Jason said, pulling the rest of his own equipment on.
He opted for his lightest armor, an unpowered suit that could be easily concealed beneath clothing. It was flexible and would stop most blades and a few shots from common handheld weaponry one would expect to find on a world like this. He shrugged into his big duster that offered its own protection against energy weapons and had active cooling so he could wear it comfortably on a hot world.
To him, the coat looked absurd, but it allowed him to sling one of his smaller railguns under an arm without being too obvious about it.
"What's next? Doc comes down and asks for a sword?" Crusher grumbled.
"Cage is still pissed you got..."